Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
Well, you know, quite frankly, I just wanted to make maple syrup sexier.
Tim Burton of Burton's Maplewood Farm. Sexier maple syrup comes from aging it in rum, brandy, and bourbon barrels. The particular syrup he aged for Chef Daniel Orr has some cinnamon, star anise, and lemon zest tossed in. Burton will talk about how he came up with this harebrained idea in the first place, and then we cook with the stuff, a spiced maple syrup creme brulee. Harvest Public Media looks at farmers who are growing food on less productive plots of land. In the second half of the show, lentil soup and some chili with lentils floating in there as well. And we visit Schacht Farm to meet Mandy Napier and her hogs. Stay with us. First order of business, our food news headlines with Luann Johnson.
Starting this month, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program recipients will see their monthly benefits decrease. That's because the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009 expired on October 31st. It had temporarily boosted benefits to help individuals and families impacted by the economic downturn. The amount of the decrease depends on the household size. According to the USDA's website, a family of four will see their benefits cut by $36 a month. SNAP is now serving more than 23 million households and nearly 48 million people, according to the most recent government data through June. The USDA says the average monthly benefit is about $275 per household. In related news, congressional negotiations on a new farm bill began this week. Here's where we left it. Both the House and the Senate passed bills to trim spending on SNAP benefits by tightening eligibility and work requirements. But the House's cuts of $4 billion a year are 10 times deeper than the Senate's. Indiana's congressmen represent the two sides of the debate. Marlon Stutzman says there's bipartisan agreement to end direct payments to farmers. The representative led a push to separate SNAP from the farm bill and is circulating a letter urging negotiators to keep it that way. But despite agreement over the direct payments portion of the bill, Senator Joe Donnelly says there are still significant differences over food stamps. Stay tuned this fall for more news about a potential farm bill. EarthEats.org is the place to go for the latest in food news. And Whole Foods Market has announced it will start labeling its produce with a simplified sustainability index by September 2014. One of the country's largest retailers of organic food said it would boil down factors like pesticides, the welfare of farm workers, water and energy use, packaging, as well as climate and pollinator impact into a three-tiered scale: good, better, and best. In a news release, Whole Foods Global Vice President of Perishables said the new ratings will provide, quote, deeper transparency to shoppers. The Sustainability Index is the company's latest step in a mission to inform customers about the practices of its suppliers, including organic farming, genetic modification, gluten, and fair trade practices. The company announced in March this year that it would label all of its products that contain GMO ingredients. It also lobbied in favor of a grassroots campaign in Washington State for GMO labeling. Despite support for new food labels, Whole Foods has weathered a few public relations kerfuffles this year, including allegations that two Spanish-speaking employees in New Mexico were mistreated. The company has also taken heat for the controversial views of its co-founder and co-CEO, John Mackey, who is an outspoken opponent of labor unions and considers climate change to be a natural phenomenon with possible benefits. We find out about news on Twitter. We share it there as well. Connect with us at Earth Eats.
More about these stories at eartheats.org. Luann Johnson, thanks for the news.
You got it.
In recent years, farmers in the Midwest have transformed millions of acres of prairie grass to rows of corn. High crop prices are a big motivation, but some also believe crop insurance is encouraging farmers to roll the dice on less productive land. Grant Gerlach of Harvest Public Media reports.
Rod Kristen and his sister Kay farm corn, soybeans, and some wheat on the family's land near the small town of Steiner in southeastern Nebraska. But Rod says their main crop is grass.
Big Blue Stem is our big producer. That's kind of our Cadillac grass.
Between 200 and 300 cows and their calves graze year-round on the Kristen's native prairie pastures. We walk through yellow bunches of goldenrod and blue stem shimmering in the breeze. Kristen says grass is both a natural resource and their farm's foundation.
Grass under management has the ability to store water and prevent erosion and provide wildlife habitat, which is all a side benefit because what keeps us in business is the feed value.
Kristen says this patch of pasture is virgin prairie. It's never been plowed. But in recent years, he says it's become common to see farmers take cattle off their pastures to plant more corn.
Even some steep sloped and poor ground is being farmed.
Just last year in Nebraska, the U.S. Department of Agriculture says nearly 55,000 acres of land that had never grown crops was broken out for farming. It was the most in the country. But the same thing is happening across other Midwestern states, like South Dakota, Iowa, and Kansas. Mary Kay Thatcher of the National Farm Bureau Federation says it's easy to tell why farmers are trading grass for corn or soybeans. Look at grain prices.
When you have corn and bean prices as high as they've been for the last year plus, you're going to expect that some pasture land is probably going to go to cropland.
Grain prices, spurred by the ethanol boom, set off a nationwide plow up. A study from the Environmental Working Group shows from 2008 to 2011, farmers reclaimed 23.7 million acres of grasslands, wetlands, and woodlands for farming, an area roughly the size of Indiana. Some of that land had been enrolled in a federal conservation program that pays farmers to keep land out of production. But Tracy Bruckner of the Center for Rural Affairs says some of it is marginal land, land that may have poor soil or be prone to erosion and isn't suitable for farming long term.
It won't be profitable for them to continue growing crops on that land, especially if grain prices go down. However, if you can put marginal land into production and get a revenue guarantee on that land, people will put some of that land back into production.
If the crop thrives, farmers cash in on high prices. If it fails, they can lean on the insurance. A bipartisan sod saver provision in the farm bill would change that. It would cut premium subsidies and lower the potential insurance payouts for crops planted on busted sod.
You know, those acres in Nebraska would be outside that prairie pothole region. Our view is that it should not be the government's job to help provide a guarantee on those acres. So if they want to do that, they're doing that at their own risk because it was a good risk to take.
Come, girls! Come, babies! Let's go!
Kate Kristen shakes a feed bucket, and soon we're surrounded by black cattle munching on corn and clover. Just across the fence is more grass, another one of their pastures, except that it almost wasn't. Rod Kristen says for 15 years it was under a contract in a federal conservation program. Just a few years ago, that contract expired.
Well, that's when crop prices are escalating. Big sways in the markets kind of make you think, you know.
It was tempting, he says, to plant corn for a few years and make some extra money while prices were high. But in the end, the field stayed in pasture. For the way the Kristens do things, taking out the grass didn't add up.
Once you kill the sod, you know, that's a whole ecosystem, you know, that will change. I feel it was a good decision. Did it pay as good? Probably not.
Rod Kristen says what worked for them wouldn't work for everyone. Each farmer has to do the math for themselves. Groups hoping to preserve prairie grasslands are hoping that changes in crop insurance are enough to ensure farmers are making a long-term calculation. I'm Grant Gerlach, Harvest Public Media.
Read and listen to more stories from the reporting team at Harvest Public Media on their website, harvestpublicmedia.org. A maple syrup story in November, 8 months after the trees were tapped? Sure. Tim Burton of Burton's Maplewood Farm is visiting Chef Daniel Orr with a special batch of maple syrup.
So that'll give it a little bit more clarity than that. I mean, that's pretty good, but it'll give it a little... So take a swig.
This stuff has been aged in Applejack brandy barrels from Starlight Distilleries in Starlight, Indiana. It was also seasoned with some spices and lemon peel.
We zested a bunch of lemons over here at the restaurant. We sent them over to the maple camp. and he did the rest. So, and we added the cinnamon, some star anise, and the spices, and
kind of a Caribbean flair. You know, I mean, it's kind of cool. It's like no other barrel aged maple syrup that we've done as of yet, but we're getting real creative.
This syrup was tapped in February 2012 and poured into the barrels in May with seasonings. Twice a month, Burton fired the barrels to heat the syrup from the outside in to encourage the aging process. Then, after a year of developing flavors, it's ready for use in the restaurant.
Take me back to the beginning. Why did you decide initially to start fiddling with your maple syrup?
Well, you know, quite frankly, I just wanted to make maple syrup sexier. And so we just started looking around domestically for rum, bourbon, and brandy barrels. Obviously, the bourbon wasn't going to be an issue. We were wondering about where are we going to get our rum barrels? Are we going to have to go out of the country for the rum barrels? And we didn't have to do that because there's a small batch distiller in Tennessee, in Kelso, Tennessee, called Pritchard's Distillery. And so Phil Pritchard said, come on down and get your rum barrels, and so we took off from there, yeah.
Burton is expecting a shipment of blackberry whiskey barrels from Leopold Brothers in Denver, Colorado. They're getting barrels from Breckenridge Distillery and High West Whiskey in Park City, Utah. Their collaboration with Brennan's in New Orleans sounds especially interesting. Tabasco bourbon barrel maple syrup. Tim Burton says he's having fun learning as he goes.
Initially, we started off with barrel aging our maple syrup for 6 months, and we were calling it good at 6 months. Well, we inadvertently aged some maple syrup for 12 months. We were doing some housekeeping in the maple house, and I went to move a brandy barrel, and it was heavy. So we emptied it, and what do you know? There was like 30 gallons of syrup in there that we had put in there like a year ago type of thing. And not only was the brandy more prevalent in it, I mean, it was like three times stronger. So then we started taking a look at this and saying, hey, you know what? Maybe we should do this for 12 months opposed to six. Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Chef.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
See you later. How are you going to use this in what recipes?
Well, I think this is great just on, of course, pancakes and French toast and all that kind of stuff. But I think it would be wonderful in a creme brulee, a maple creme brulee. It'd be great on pork chops, great to finish pans with, all that kind of stuff. So I think it'll be delicious. It'll add that Caribbean flair. You could even do it on salmon. I think planked salmon would be really wonderful. And when you add a little bit of saltiness to this, it's really going to kick it all the way up to get that sweet, salty, wonderful, spicy flavor.
Someone should try maple syrup on plank roasted salmon. Let us know how that tastes. Maple creme brulee, did you hear that in Chef Orr's list? Great idea for our first recipe. A new chef to introduce, this is Emily Bolin, the pastry chef at Farm Bloomington. She's been cooking professionally for 4 years, but her cooking roots go back a lot longer than that.
I was a stay-at-home mother, and all I did was watch the Food Network channel and cook at home and gained 80 pounds doing it. And my husband said, why don't you do this for a living? Because you rock. And so we went to school, and I went to pastry school, and here I am.
Okay, so what are you making for me today?
This is our maple spiced creme brulee.
What I'm looking at, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 egg yolks. I see no white in sight.
No, it is all egg yolks, just for to stabilize it. And I have a half a cup of sugar, just white plain sugar, and you whisk that in as well. And then we have a quart of steamed cream on the stove.
All right, do you want me to slowly start adding this?
Yes.
Chef Orr, you're pouring while you're whisking. Is this a tag team effort?
Usually you could probably do it by yourself. You just want to slowly add your heavy cream so that you don't cook and coagulate your egg yolks. So then we don't have scrambled eggs. Now I'm going to add a tablespoon of vanilla just to give it some nice flavor. It'll help pull the maple out. And then we have a teaspoon of Chef D's sweet seasoning. Clove, allspice, cinnamon, nutmeg.
Whisking, ever whisking, ever whisking.
Yes. You want everything mixed together so that every bite tastes the same.
Chef's philosophy when he's cooking savory stuff is he wants every bite to be a little bit different. Not so with pastry.
No. More so in baked custards. You want it all to taste the same and flowy. Next, I'm going to add a third cup of the maple syrup.
And I see, what do I see? Little lemon chunks in there? Lemon zest?
Yes. Lemon especially will help bring the cinnamon and the sweetness out. And it just makes everything taste better when you add lemon.
I agree with you. I agree.
And now our mixture is done. It's really easy just to make that up, and it looks really runny. You'll think, how on earth will this bake together? But it does, I promise. So you just take it and ladle it into your ramekin or your dish. And you don't want to fill it too full, maybe about 3/4 the way or about 1/4 inch away from the top. And then you bake that in a water bath at 350 for about 40, 45 minutes, just until when you shake it, just a little ripple effect inside. Yeah, you don't want it to jiggle too much.
And with the magic of radio.
And you have a lighter. Just a regular old light. Whoa! And then Chef comes with a torch.
You just want to sprinkle your sugar over your brulee. You just want it to kind of fill in all your little nooks and crannies on the brulee and kind of sink down in. It makes a nice little crust.
Oh, you are not going skimpy on that sugar. That's
Shake it off.
Oh, and then you're removing the excess. Okay, so you're just covering, just literally sticking sugar on the very top layer.
Yes. Okay, and then we light our torch. You're looking for like a nice caramel color. You don't want to get any black spots. You're just trying to lightly toast your sugar. Just a nice little candy color.
How's it looking?
It's looking really good.
And tasting as good as it looks, but don't take our word for it. Pictures on the website, the recipes there as well. Give it a shot for your next big family dinner, eartheats.org. Coming up, lentils make appearances in our two recipes. All the ingredients are lined up and ready for Chef Daniel Orr to toss into a soup and then a chili.
You know, I don't know if everyone can afford it in their household, but it's always great to have one piece of equipment, and that's called a sous chef.
In the kitchen, first thing after this. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all four locations and a garden center at East 3rd Street. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, therapeutic massage, and Hatha Yoga, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. Memberships and gift certificates available. More at TouchstoneWellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan.
Are you ready to make some soup?
Let's do it.
We're going to do a yellow lentil soup today. And in the recipe, it does call for some stock, but you could just as easily use water. So if you want to make it vegetarian, you can use water. If you want to make it vegan, you don't have to put the sour cream or yogurt in at the end if you don't want to. All right, so we're going to get started by adding the extra virgin olive oil to our pot and quickly following it with the chopped garlic. Okay, and you're looking for that kind of roasty, toasty aroma to come through. The garlic will just start to turn a little bit brown, and that's when you want to have your other vegetables ready, because you don't want that garlic to burn or it will get bitter. All right, so we've got our onions. You know, I don't know if everyone can afford it in their household, but it's always great to have one piece of equipment, and that's called a sous chef. All right, so
you've got like six or seven of those around here.
We've got quite a few around here, so it makes it a lot easier. You can just start, you know, you arrive and everything's ready for you.
You know, you've got a young niece or nephew wandering around. Put them to work, right?
Absolutely. All right, we're just going to stir those around, coat them with that oil and garlic mixture. Okay, we're going to toss in the carrots, tomatoes. Okay, and then we've got our red lentils. Lentil actually comes from the word lens, and these look like little eye lenses. Okay, I'm adding some water. You see all those nice veggies in there. We're going to bring that to a boil. The other things that you could add to this, if at this point, if you'd like, you could throw in a bay leaf, some rosemary. You know, there's lots of ways that you can dress this up. They could throw some crab meat in this, which would be great. Some shrimp. You could always put a little bowl of bacon out there. People could sprinkle some bacon. They could put some sour cream on top of it when it's done. You know, use the recipe as a guideline, but don't act like you're reading the Bible. All right, I'm going to finish by adding a little bit of the chili powder and then some salt. We're going to cover this, bring it to a boil, and let it simmer for 20 minutes, and you got soup.
Winter weather is finally starting to sink its teeth into us, and around here, that means chili. Thick, hearty, warm chili. Lentils again, but also pumpkin in this recipe, some coffee grounds, and the protein is bison. Chef Daniel Orr is making just about the most interesting chili recipe around.
Today we are going to do another wonderful winter dish. And this you can make ahead and eat for several days. You could make a sloppy joe with it for one meal. You could put it on top of a hot dog for another meal. Or you could just have a bowl of chili and serve it with one of my grandmother's biscuits, some sour cream, and some scallions. So you can make a big batch of this. It does freeze well, too. All right, so just a little bit of olive oil. You could use any type of fat that you like. We're going to add the bison, and you can see the bison's a real rich, dark, almost burgundy-looking meat. It's very, very lean. It's actually leaner than turkey. Just going to break that up. Okay, and we're going to just start adding the other ingredients. It's a really simple recipe. It's just about tossing all this stuff in. We're going to add our red and green peppers. We've got some diced carrots. Lots of onions. You can't have too many onions in a chili. A couple cups of fresh diced tomatoes, about 2 cups of canned tomatoes. We've got 1/4 cup of sorghum. Now, sorghum is a type of molasses that we use. It comes from a grain that's kind of close to a corn. It has a nice sweet flavor, kind of like molasses. Do you want to try it?
Let's give this a shot. Ooh, that's so rich.
I'm going to toss all this together.
I can smell the onions already.
And at Earth Eats, where there are onions, what usually follows?
Garlic, absolutely. Of course.
So we got our garlic. Got probably a couple tablespoons of garlic. Okay, and now we're going to add our seasonings. We've got my favorite sweet seasons, which is that kind of Chinese five-spice flavor. We've got some ground cumin, some cayenne pepper, which is going to give it a little bit of a bite, and a little bit of cinnamon. Okay, and we just got a couple more ingredients. This is where the Columbus Cowboy comes in. This is the some old coffee. So when you have leftover coffee, don't throw it away. What I like to do is to use it in chilies and stews. Red-eye gravy actually has coffee in it, so it's a nice gravy you can make out of coffee. The other thing you can do is you can pour it into an ice cube tray, and then if you like iced coffee, instead of putting regular ice in it, you can use frozen coffee ice cubes.
Oh, here comes the pumpkin.
Here comes the pumpkin. And what this is going to do is add a touch of sweetness as well as give it a nice, rich, creamy viscosity to the chili. And the last ingredient is the lentils. We're just going to top this off with enough water to moisten it all up. Again, we don't want to add too much and have to boil it down for a long time. The lentils are going to absorb some of the water. So we're going to let this come to a full boil. Reduce the temperature to a simmer, and then let it simmer for about a half an hour or until it gets nice and thick and chili-like.
Does that have you salivating? Well, we hope so. Find the recipe, try it for yourself. That's at eartheats.org. A field trip before we call it a day. After spending so much time in the kitchen, it's nice to get out on a farm and see where the food actually comes from. Mandy Napier is an old friend of Earth Eats. She introduced us to her turkeys last year. We stopped by Schacht Farm last month to see her hogs just days before she drove them to the processor for her holiday orders. These hogs have been on the farm since April. They've been grazing and enjoying some local grain, growing from 40 pounds now to about 280 pounds. Napier says basically staying out of trouble for the most part.
They're very curious, but they're also a little reserved. So it's fun to be out with them.
I don't know how else to put this other than, are you going to miss them?
Well, no. You know, I love having the hogs here. I very much enjoy their personality, but always being mindful of the fact that we are raising them to eat, and my part in that, I feel like when they come to the farm, I take on the responsibility of ensuring that they have a good life. And it's easy for me to take them to the processor because that's kind of the final step on me doing right by them.
How long did it take you to get to that point mentally as a farmer?
I have a lot of miles, I guess, to mull through this process and to just kind of keep myself in check with the purpose of them and am I doing right by them? What can I do better?
We just went on a long walk. How much land are we talking about here?
We have 57 acres here. Everybody has to share. So there are times when we will move the hens in to where the hogs are now and they will put down a nice dose of nitrogen onto the soil. And that provides a really lush forage for the hogs to then be moved into and to graze over. So kind of feel like a conductor sometimes where it's like, okay, you move here and you move there. And the timing and the logistics of things is a lot of the fun of it for me. So,
and as we're talking, your hogs are sort of ambling toward us. Hello.
Hello, hello, hello. Hi, sweet babies. Here, well, the last two batches, and yeah, they're kind of right on target for their weight and their age. You'll notice some of them are black, some of them are more red in color. The red ones are Tamworth. It's an old heritage breed. The black ones are a large black, or there's some cross between the two. So these are both heritage breeds that have the instinct to find their own food. As you can hear, they are
they're vocal.
Used to getting special treats. They're used to getting treats and rubbed on and that sort of thing. So.
Oh, they think I have treats for them.
They do. Sorry about that. I didn't mean to set you up so that you would be disappointed.
Really, they're all they're lined up like they're expecting the delivery.
Yes, they are.
Mandy Napier of Schacht Farms. It was the most gorgeous fall day when we went out there. See photos and read even more about her hogs, like how many farmers does it take to load 24 hogs into a trailer? Read articles at eartheats.org. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh, local, organic food with delis at all four locations and a garden center at East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, therapeutic massage, and Hatha Yoga, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. Memberships and gift certificates available. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years. Building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. Thanks for tuning into Earth Eats, and thanks for supporting local food on local radio. I'm Annie Corrigan.